We developed Hexcel Pack specifically to address those concerns related to plastic packaging and coming up with a full sustainable suite of packaging that, one, reduces the box size that you actually receive, protects the products that are inside that box better than what plastic can do, and three, ultimately offer that full sustainable suite of packaging to protect those items inside that box. And the Beehive was a big inspiration to create the Hexcel related die-cut product.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Lauren Herskowitz, partner of Hexcel Pack, sustainable solutions that work. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you.
Growing up in India, we used to get most of our shopping from the neighborhood grocery store. Now, with the advent and growth of e-commerce, we often get a box which is about 40% filled with packaging padding. According to Oceana.org, Amazon.com generated in 2019, before the pandemic, 465 million tons of plastic. These consisted of bubble wraps, packing peanuts, air pillows, etc. How big is the e-commerce packaging industry?
So, great question, and thanks for the opportunity for doing this with me. The e-commerce marketplace from a protective packaging standpoint is in the hundreds of billions of dollars. And the significant amount of that packaging is plastic related, as you noted, regarding Amazon.
But as a business owner, I want to make a good impression. I want to, you know, have this package with a lot of paper, maybe a large carton, and I need to protect the items too, right? So it's not just frivolous.
Right. So our goal as an organization, as a packaging company, and I've been in this industry for over 21 years, I started in the plastics world and the plastics industry with the goal of starting our company about 6 years ago, specifically on sustainable packaging solutions and exactly what you just said, eliminating the plastic within that box to protect the item or the items within that. And as big a part of that is reducing redundant packaging inside of that box. What does that mean? Exactly what you said. If they're wrapping the item in bubble or they're wrapping the item in foam, and then they're taking that product and they're putting it in a box and then ultimately filling the rest of the box with air pillows, in our minds, that doesn't meet the need for a great end user experience, especially from a sustainability standpoint. So we developed Hexcel Pack specifically to address those concerns related to plastic packaging and coming up with a full sustainable suite of packaging that, one, reduces the box size that you actually receive, protects the products that are inside that box better than what plastic can do, and three, ultimately offer that full sustainable suite of packaging to protect those items inside that box. So when a consumer does receive it and open that box, they get that experience that they're looking for, that since plastic has such a negative connotation in the marketplace right now, paper being the most sustainable option out there in the marketplace right now, they see that product, they like the product, their customer satisfaction with that product goes up, and ultimately the image of the companies that are using that product definitely goes up as well, because that gets them their sustainable targets or their sustainable benefits that they've always been talking about and actually implementing it.
But often now people are recycling the plastic, right, or reusing it. What happens to the ones which are not recycled or reused? Where do they end up?
Very great question. And we've done a considerable amount of research into that. And a good site to actually look at is called theoceancleanup.com. And they specifically are out there managing that process of really understanding how much product goes through the recycling stream, how much product actually gets to the recyclability companies to actually regenerate post-consumer waste or post-industrial waste and reuse that back in the stream. And they estimate that there's over 5 trillion pieces of plastic that doesn't get necessarily to the recycling stream and actually ends up in the oceans. and the oceans have become a big garbage ground for plastic waste. And we're starting to see significant negative effects on both the algae and the flora on the bottom of the ocean because the plastic's starting to cover the bottom of the ocean. And ultimately, all of these organizations are starting up because there's so much plastic making it into our waterways that it's starting to have a major negative impact on our ecosystem, as well as all the other negative benefits that you have. Plastic washing up on beaches, plastic literally, you could see all over the internet, there's stories of plastic wrap getting on, an example, birds' beaks, ultimately not allowing them to actually feed properly. It's a huge and significant issue, of which paper really does address that in the grand scheme of things, from a ocean standpoint, from a recyclability standpoint, from a compostability standpoint, and virtually everything else that goes along with the environmental benefit of using paper.
So there's a lot of talk about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Where exactly is that located?
So Great Pacific Garbage Patch is basically in the North Pacific subtropics. And I actually have some statistics from 2018. And that's where this statistic of where they have 1.6 million kilometers squared containing nearly 80,000 metric tons of buoyant plastic waste. And that's debris also from fishermen, that's debris from dumping, that's debris from basically any aspect of getting rid of waste in a stream. So it's a significant and major issue that needs to be addressed.
So when I think about this Great Pacific Garbage Patch, I'm just imagining plastic bottles just floating up on the surface. It's not just that, it's there are tiny microplastics, right, too, which kind of make the water murky. They make the water cloudy.
Good point. And I use the example, I'm not going to mention the name, but a major retailer that used to have antibacterial soaps that had these microbial pieces of plastic that were used to actually as an exfoliant for your hands. And those are made of little microplastics. And all of those pieces, they realized could not be separated as part of the water and sanitation stream. And all of those little microbial pieces got into the ocean to a point where they finally realized that the significant impact that small plastic actually is having on the flora, on algae, on the ecosystem, on animals actually eating those little microbial pieces of plastic. And ultimately, they ceased using those items in their soaps. So very good point. Creates a whole host of other issues within the ecosystem as well as the water, and it's a significant issue.
So the plastic that we are talking about, which is in our waterways, which has not been recycled, is about 20 or 30% of the overall plastic, which is not recycled.
I don't know the exact amount, but I know that in 2016 through 2018, they suggested over 30% of plastic waste was making it into our water system and not being recycled.
So 70% is still on land, right?
And of that 70%, a lot of that's making it to the landfill and not actually getting recycled. So a very small portion actually gets through the recycling stream. So if you go to a typical landfill site, the amount of plastic that you'd see there is far greater than you would expect. And a lot of the plastics that you see coming through the recycling stream cannot be recycled. Mm-hmm. Call it a plastic mailer. There's something called a polymailer, where if you've got a paper label that's attached to that actual polymailer, you cannot recycle that product. So that ultimately, when it gets to a recycling stream, gets rejected and ends up going to the landfill. And we're seeing more and more of that today, where you need to have a product that is 100% recyclable to be able to get through the recycling stream. Otherwise, a number 7 recyclable product, where most jurisdictions or municipalities don't have the capabilities of recycling that product, ends up getting to the landfill anyways.
So what about the cool triangles that they have with the recycle symbol with the numbers? And I feel very happy when I put them amongst my weekly recyclables.
So what's interesting about that point is, even though as a consumer you may think that it's actually going to get recycled, a lot of the times it's actually not getting recycled. So when you look at that recyclability logo, there's numbers on there, and those specific numbers equate to the capabilities of the municipality in which that product is going to be recycled. So some jurisdictions do not have the capabilities of recycling a number 4 or a number 7 or a number 2. It all depends on that area. Mm-hmm. And you also have, if the product's contaminated and can't go through the recycling stream, that would get rejected as well. So where, I'll use the example of a polymailer as well, because that's within our industry, where it says it's a number 4 recyclable, it's only a number 4 recyclable if you don't have a paper label on there. So you have to actually cut off the paper label from that bag in order to make it 100% recyclable. There's new organizations that have started up, like Cradle to Cradle, as well as How to Recycle, and they're getting a lot more effective at putting the right information on the packaging so the consumer could really know if the item they're throwing in their blue bin or the recyclability bin is actually recyclable in their municipality or within their jurisdiction.
And I also heard that those triangles were actually created by the plastic company as a marketing propaganda.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily propaganda. I would just say that it was developed to be able to educate the consumer on how to dispose of their product in a much more environmentally friendly method. But it does not give the full story and the full information around what it actually really means. Mm-hmm. And the average consumer is not going to go do that research. If you're an educated consumer, you might go onto a site to get the definition of the logo and definition of the numbers and all that other good stuff. But majority of us are just going to throw it into the blue bin and not realize that down the stream, it's just going to get rejected and actually ends up in the landfill.
So Hexelpack offers a sustainable alternative to this with something called slit paper technology.
Correct.
Who invented it?
So my business partner, David Goodrich, invented this technology almost 30 years ago. And in the last 6 years, we've taken it to another level by changing the way that we actually die cut it to actually get an even more environmentally friendly paper-based solution that minimizes the need and the use for a massive amount of paper to wrap and protect a fragile item within that context. So David Goodrich invented it, and we just reinvented the wheel about 6 years ago to relaunch the product as Hexelpack.
How did he come up with the idea?
David, by nature, is an innovative solutions-based expert. And back then, he saw the need for more sustainable products within the marketplace. But at that point, the market really wasn't ready for it. There are some competitors that do have similar technology that put it out there in the marketplace, mm-hmm. but didn't really promote it the way that we're promoting it now. So the way that we've reinvented it is we created a different slit technology, different slit pattern within that actual paper to be able to expand more effectively and create a better cushion around that product to protect it much more easily and use less product within that box to send to the consumer. So pretty exciting.
So I read somewhere that the slits are cut in hexagons.
So when you expand it, the slits are cut in straight lines to when you expand the actual material, it creates a hexagonal shape that gives you the cell height to be able to create that protection and nest around the actual product.
Hexagon is something which has 6 sides, 6 edges, and 6 vertices.
Yep.
Why is it the strongest?
So basically, engineering and science behind it is simply when you get 6 sides, the way that you actually pull it and expand it, it gives you the highest amount of cell height on the paper to create the protection around the actual product. So once you expand that and wrap it, it also gives you the nesting capability similar to a beehive. If you look at a honeycomb, when you pull out a beehive, very similar concept to the slit technology that we pretty much have come up with.
So we had a guest a while back, and he was making geodesic domes as homes, you know, for people to live in. And there's some similarity. He said it's a very, very strong structure. And if you look at a geodesic dome, it is similar. It has 6 triangles with 1 common vertex.
Okay.
And he said, like, straight walls are not good for support. hexagon also can be divided into six triangles. Your thing, what you're talking about, beehives, is that the same concept in Hexopack?
So very similar. The concept really is getting the height of the actual material as high as possible in three areas of the structure to be able to have that impact resistance and damage resistance on the actual product. So very similar.
A lot of inspirations for design comes from nature. Was David inspired by, say, looking at the beehive while designing this?
That was an inspiration of his, and that's pretty much how this all started. Was he is definitely big into nature, hiking, understanding the ecosystem around him, and really being part of nature. And the beehive was a big inspiration to create the Hexcel-related die-cut product. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that concept ended up molding into a variety of different products, a sustainable suite around the hexagon. And in some of our marketing, we specifically promote and use that concept of the beehive as well, because it has been the driving factor to create the overall cushioning perspective that we do get.
Nature is the master designer, I agree. And does David have a patent on this design?
All of our products are either internationally patented, US-based patents, where we are going to be going after international patents, and ultimately patent pending. So our patent portfolio is significant and is definitely a big component of our overall business model and business plan, and very exciting part of our portfolio.
I did receive a while back something which is packaged. I don't know if it was your product, but with the similar packing, it was really fun. You know, people like the bubble wrap because they like to pop it, but I thought yours was fun because it's like an accordion.
Right. So we always say that. So instead of popping the bubble, we say to them, let's change it to stretching the wrap, right? And you basically get the same tension relief while also having that sustainable mindset of using paper. And if you're popping the bubble, you can't reuse it, right? Mm-hmm. But with the Hexcel, if you expand it, it creates the tension and you're allowed to actually reuse the actual product. Popping bubble, it just goes to the waste stream. So even more of a sustainable benefit there is you could reuse the product after you receive it by re-stretching it, wrapping your item, and sending it back out. Pretty exciting stuff there.
So when I looked at the paper, it was very simple. It just had a bunch of slits. And of course, at that point in time, I didn't know about the hexagon and the strength that structure gives. But you or David had to probably design special machines to cut precisely the cuts to give you the height that you want, right?
So we have a proprietary slit technology that we put on our converting lines to be able to make sure that we get the perfect cut all the time and the perfect pressures to be able to create that cut. And we have different slit patterns based on the type of product that we're actually going to promote and use it. For example, for wrap, we've got our own slit pattern that's specifically for fragile items. For void fill, it's a different slit pattern to be able to create the bounce and the cushion around the product to give it the most effective damage control within the actual box. So eliminate the shifting and really blocking and bracing the product inside that. For our new pallet wrap, it's a completely different slit pattern as well to be able to make sure that it wraps around the actual boxes and holds everything in place. And same thing with the mailer. It's a different slit pattern to get the right height in that mailer and the right cushioning protection to be better than a typical craft bubble mailer or poly bubble mailer, but not too over the top so it doesn't get through the mail stream under a certain height restriction from a mailer standpoint. So it's a very fine-tuned slit technology that David really has mastered to be able to create different patterns for different applications. And it really shows well in our different product lines specific to what it's being used for.
Did you say that Hexcel-Pack can be used to wrap pallets?
Yes, correct.
Which will go on trailers or containers. How does it protect from the moisture?
It depends on the application. So for dry goods, it works perfectly from a humidity standpoint within those trailers and all that stuff. All of our products still function totally fine. Mm-hmm. If it's in a cold area or cold goods where you've got sweating of material or sweating of, let's call it cold water is a perfect example. If you take a cold water bottle and bring it outside, you'll see the sweat around the actual bottle. The traditional pallet wrap that we've come up with would not work because that would basically saturate the water and it would tear. But there are environmentally stable and environmentally water-based solutions that we could coat the actual material with to protect it from the humidity. At this point, we're really focused on the dry goods market and not necessarily on wet, humid, sweating items. But we will be in that marketplace in the short term.
So what kind of paper do you use?
So we use PEFC certified, and I know you're going to ask me for the exact verbiage of what PEFC stands for. So the PEFC is the Program for the Endorsement of Forest Certification. All of our paper comes from some of the most sustainable forests in Canada and some of the most sustainable forests in the world. PEFC certification is very well known from that standpoint. They really do not clear-cut forests. It's regentrified forests and actually forests where Canadian government actually says go in and start cutting down to create paper or lumber because there's risk of forest fires. There's risk of an insect that's coming in from outside of the world that could be infesting the area. Or ultimately, the trees are just getting too big. They got to regentrify the forests. And as part of PEFC, all of that log that is used as part of the cut is used as either lumber, it's used as either paper, it's used to heat the mills, it's used, the entire log that they cut down is used for something. The wood chips are turned into paper. All of our paper is either craft or bleached white. Most of our paper is, I would say all of our paper is 100% virgin because of the stretch that we get in the paper. But the sustainability side of it,